This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
This episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. New Hampshire native singer-songwriter Rick Lang has written over 70 songs, many of which have been recorded by other artists in the bluegrass, southern gospel, and even jazz music industries. Rick is also a freelance writer, conducts songwriting workshops, and currently chairs the IBMA Songwriter Committee as a mentor for the IBMA Songwriting Mentor Program. In this next edition of Americana Music Profiles, Rick and I talk about life, his music, and his latest record, The Undertow.
Hi, Rick. Welcome to the podcast this afternoon.
Great to be with you, Greg, and thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate the opportunity to chat with you. You're in New Hampshire, right?
I am. About 30 minutes from the seacoast.
Yeah.
Right here on the small but beautiful New Hampshire coastline.
Okay, cool. Well, we were talking offline a minute ago, and it's where you're talking to me from is an office on a lumber yard, and although that has nothing to do with music, it kind of struck me that there's a bit of a tie-in because of the type of work that you do with the lumber. Give me just a quick story about what that's about and what you do with the wood.
Sure thing. My lifelong career has been in the hardwood lumber industry, and I started way back in 1970, and my wife and I started our own business back in 1986, and have been going ever since. And we supply high-end hardwoods to the woodworking trade in our region, which includes high-end kitchen cabinet makers, custom woodworkers, furniture makers, architectural millwork companies, and anybody who uses high-end hardwoods for manufacture of any product, like hardwoods like cherry and black walnut and maple and birch, and specialty woods too, like curly maple, for instruments and stuff like that, bird's eye maple.
Yeah. I would, one of the things that you're known for is songwriting. And I have this, this image that doing what you do, working with the different woods, would lend itself potentially to some, songwriting ideas. Is that true?
It is true. Songwriting to me is a very organic experience, and working with hardwoods in a natural resource like hardwood lumber is very organic.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of my early part of my career in the woods, working at sawmills and working at the woods, marking timber.
Mm.
And it just seemed like a really nice combination of the music and songwriting. And in my work in the hardwood industry, just seemed very compatible. And
mm-hmm.
they feed off each other and somehow seem to complement each other.
Which came first, the interest in music and a music career, or the hardwood work that you do?
Well, I've always loved music, but I would say the hardwood career in hardwoods really came first.
Uh-huh.
And once I get into the, into the mid-80s, when I stumbled upon bluegrass music for the first time, and like so many people, get totally captivated
right.
by it, my interest and passion for songwriting and playing music started.
Mm-hmm.
And it grew over a period of time for the last 30 years or so,
mm-hmm.
Right along with my passion for the hardwood business.
Mm-hmm.
So they both have grown and evolved at the same time. And I spend most of my time in my life either doing one or the other, and I just go back and forth. And I feel very, very fortunate to have a life to where the two central parts of it are things that I absolutely love and have a passion for.
That's cool.
So very, very blessed.
Now, you used the word stumble. Tell me what that meant for you. How did you discover music and bluegrass music for yourself?
Well, I grew up in the 60s, and the first music that I kind of that caught my interest was the early soul music and early
uh-huh.
R&B music of
uh-huh.
the late 50s and early 60s, going on to like early rock and roll
right.
and Motown music and contemporary folk rock music like the Byrds and bands like that. But then in the 80s, I kind of lost interest in a lot of music because it had changed. And I was listening to, I think I was listening to a Byrds album one time when Clarence White had joined the band.
Hmm.
And I was captivated by his playing and studied his background and found out he was a bluegrasser and was renowned in the bluegrass world.
Hmm.
So I went out and got some of the records of the early Kentucky Colonels he was part of.
Okay.
And when I heard it, I was so blown away.
Yeah.
It was just such awesome music. I just fell right into it and then started listening to other bluegrass records and just jumping in. And ever since then, that's the music that's really kind of moved me.
Yeah. Were you a player of an instrument before you discovered this music that you enjoyed, or did that lead you to become a player?
Well, I had been playing guitar ever since childhood.
Okay.
And I would play, I remember when I was younger, you know, learning really Everly Brothers music, and some music from the like late 50s to early 60s, and playing contemporary folk music and stuff like that. So I'd always played guitar. And when I stumbled upon bluegrass, I realized this is a whole new challenge to learn how to play really good bluegrass rhythm guitar. And
mm-hmm.
found it very challenging. And it inspired me to work at it more and learn how to play guitar so I could accompany songs that I liked. And then I found as I get into songwriting, I would have to kind of learn more on the guitar if
mm-hmm.
I was going to use that as a writing tool to be able to write in different settings. So if I'm writing a sad song, I could play some sort of music that went along with the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to expand on my guitar playing so I could, it would help my songwriting, and have been doing that ever since.
What part of this music inspired you to move into the songwriting side of it?
Well, that's an easy one. I think it was in the mid to late 80s when I started listening to bluegrass music. That's when a lot of, I think you'd call second generation bands were
right.
becoming very popular, like the Bluegrass Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
And Doyle Austin's first band of his own came in, came into being with Doyle Austin Quicksilver, and Virginia Squires were out there, and a few other ones. And as I listened to the music, I liked a lot of the songs. So when I found a song I really fell in love with, I would find out who wrote the song, and then found out a lot of these songs were written by people like Pete Goble and Randall Hilton. And somehow I just was captivated by the songs that they wrote and started studying the writers and looked for other songs that they had written and decided I'd like to write songs like that.
Hmm.
And I actually reached out after I get started writing, you know, really, really working hard at writing. After 2 or 3 years, I actually reached out to Randall Hilton, who I didn't know and didn't know me, and found his address and wrote him a letter and said, I want to learn how to be a writer, and would you give me some tips and listen to some of my songs? And through the mail, I would send him tapes of my songs, and he would write these really encouraging letters, giving me some ideas how to make them better, and we became pen pals.
Hmm.
And that's kind of how it started.
Cool. Yeah, okay. And this has obviously been something that's really kind of been centerpiece for you, to the point that if I read the notes correctly on your biography, you're also currently the IBMA Songwriting Committee Chair and a mentor for the IBMA Songwriting Mentor Program. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. I feel very fortunate to be part of that. The IBMA has a among its other parts of it that are really a value to the constituency, Songwriter Committee has even grown and become and really offered more to the songwriting community over the years. And I'd get on there 7 or 8 years ago and was a member and tried to contribute. And I think this is my, kind of my third term on there. And I was asked to be chair of the committee. And I found it very rewarding because I get a chance to interact with and connect with other writers and kind of and organize things for our annual World of Bluegrass event in fall that feature songwriting activities, and songwriting seminars, and songwriting workshops. And I just found I just enjoy that a lot. So I become involved and found it's just a something I really like a lot and hope to do for a long time.
And you're actually teaching songwriting workshops as well, too, right?
Yes, I do. It's some of the New England Bluegrass Festivals up here. Over the years, I've taught workshops, like the Joe Val annual workshop, annual Bluegrass Indoor Festival that they have in February. I've taught workshops there. And at Thomas Point Beach up in Maine, I've taught workshops there, and I get asked to do that from time to time, and found it's very rewarding, and again, it's a chance to kind of hang out and interact with other writers. So, I like doing that.
Mm-hmm. I know this is probably a bit subjective, but what do you see as the difference, if there is one? At least it feels for me, I can kind of hear it. A difference between bluegrass music that is kind of written and performed in the northern part of the country where you're from, compared to the kind of bluegrass music that is written, originates, performed in the southern part of the United States, geographically at least, for, you know, North Carolina, Tennessee, Kentucky, kind of geographically, can you hear the difference? What is it feel like the difference is for you?
I think there is a, there is a big difference in when listeners hear songs written and performed by, people who are, from this part of the country. We have kind of our own dialect and our own style and our own influences. And I think, down in the Appalachian areas, a lot of their influences of people who write and perform are just very different than those up here. And I think that those influences, handed down from generation to generation, just create a whole different sound.
Mm-hmm.
So I found when I started writing songs, for the bluegrass music world, a lot of my songs were sounding like a kind of northern type sounding songs, mm-hmm. based on my influences of like folk music in New England and people that I've listened to over the years.
Right.
But then I found, as I think from the 80s on, most of the music that I was listening to after that was real deal bluegrass music.
Yeah.
First and second generation bands.
Right.
And I think I listened to it so much, it changed, it kind of influenced my songwriting to where I was writing gospel sounds that sound like it was written from somebody from Kentucky as opposed to someone from New Hampshire.
Yeah.
And I could tell it was working because, from the 80s through the 90s, I very fortunately have had several of my songs recorded by some of the leading bluegrass bands. And I think it's because my style was really kind of close to what resonated with them. So I think my bluegrass influences and what I've been listening to really kind of changed the whole direction of my writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually recorded, gospel albums, like one in 2010, that was it sounds like somebody must have written all the songs who was from Virginia and not from New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
and it was very popular.
Yeah.
And did really well, was nominated for awards. But I think the thing is, all my influences poured out of me writing songs for that record. And I think it's just, that's the way I think and hear things now from kind of a bluegrass, traditional contemporary bluegrass artists and other writers.
Yeah.
And that's how I kind of see and hear things these days.
That's cool. When you write songs, are you, you mentioned that you had have several other artists have recorded your music. Do you write, or when you write occasionally, do you write with that idea in mind that you're writing for someone? Or is it kind of the other way where you write some songs and then other artists kind of find them and then feels like it fits who they are?
I never really had success writing with artists in mind. Every time I've tried it, it turned into a train wreck. Songs didn't sound organic or natural or real.
Mm-hmm.
So I found for me, what I have to do is just focus on, if I have a song idea or a concept or a storyline for a song, no matter what it is, just focus on that and immerse myself in that.
Mm-hmm.
And write music to it that sounds natural for the song. And I don't really kind of think about anything else except for the storyline and the music to the song until it's done. And then when it's done, maybe, months later, I might listen to it and think about who might it be a good fit for, a certain band or something.
Yeah, okay.
But I just go at the songs organically and just take each one in whatever direction sounds natural for the song.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. So
I know other people can write for artists, but I just haven't had...
Yeah.
I'm able to do that.
And I know that there are artists that do that, and that's why I was just curious, because songwriting is different for everyone, obviously. I'm not telling you something you don't know, but I always find it interesting when a songwriter writes for someone rather than just writes because it's something that they need to write. And it sounds like there's there's so many different styles and techniques. I was just curious to know if that was something that you did. So I appreciate you elaborating on that.
Yeah, it's very individualistic, and I wish I could. I think it's a great gift, and people who can do that, I think it's just phenomenal. I'm just unfortunately not one of them.
Yeah. Well, obviously, you've been recording over the course of your career as well, and I think I read that you've released 6 albums, and you've got a new one out, which is something we want to talk about a bit too, called Undertow. Tell me about your new record.
Well, of all the albums I've recorded and produced, this is the most interesting one in many regards, as that it's a concept album. And all the songs on the album, the storylines have some connection to the ocean.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so when I first really got serious about writing in the 80s, I would try to write about themes that seemed popular at the time, like writing about Cabin on a Hill or writing about things that I heard in other songs. So I was writing about all sorts of things that I didn't know much about and had never experienced. So after a couple of years of writing those kind of songs, I realized none of them sounded very genuine.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And they didn't sound real. And I was kind of disappointed because I put a lot of effort into it. But then I realized maybe you have to write what you know and what you're familiar with.
Yeah.
So one day I kind of stumbled upon that concept and said, well, what do you know? Well, I live a half an hour from the ocean, and I've been around the seacoast region and the ocean my entire life, so maybe if I write about things that are in my own backyard and my surroundings here, it would make more sense. So over a period of the last 25 years, I would write a song here or a song there where the storyline has something to do with the ocean. It had an ocean setting, or a story that took place at sea, or an analogy between real life and the ocean. So about 2006 came around, and I became aware that I had written quite a few songs that had something to do with the sea. And I took a look at my catalog and realized I had maybe 15 to 18 songs. And then I said, wow, this would make a very interesting concept album. So after that, between 2006 and 2011, I added a few new tunes to it. So I had a catalog of maybe 26 to 28 songs. In 2011, with my producer, Bob Dick, we sat down and picked out a dozen of these that we thought were really good choices to record, and started recording the Undertow album.
So you've been recording it for a while then.
Yeah, since 2011.
Yeah.
So what sort of happened is, like most people that I am involved with musically in our region, are not full-time musicians. They all have careers, and some of them travel. And I wanted to try to, on this particular record, my idea was I wanted to include all the people who were important to me in the New England music scene, people that I had written with, recorded with, or performed with in the past. So because of that, there's like 17 different people who appear on the Undertow record.
Yeah.
But because we all have different careers and jobs and our lives are fast and busy, we couldn't get people into the studio. It's hard to schedule people in the studio to record. So we'd just have somebody come in when they were available to do this or that. And so it just took a few years to get everybody's in there to do their parts for this record.
So it truly was a labor of love. You've been at it for quite a time on this one.
But it was really worth it because everybody did a great job. Some wonderful performances on here, and it's really a very rewarding collaboration of people that mean a lot to me in the New England music scene here.
Yeah. So if folks want to get a copy of this new record or listen to some of your back music or talk to you about songwriting, what's the best way to reach out, get in touch, and get some of your songs?
Well, I mean, people can email me or call me or go to my website, which is www.ricklangmusic.com. And my email address is just rick@ricklangmusic.com. If anybody wanted to call me, I'm available 24/7. I think I hardly sleep at all these days.
Hopefully you won't get calls at 3 o'clock in the morning, but please feel free to share your number if you want to.
That's right. Sure. It's 603-944-2934.
Great. Good.
And anybody who's interested in talking about songwriting or my music or another writer who would be interested in writing with me, collaborating would be always welcome.
Yeah, good.
The only thing I like as much as songwriting, actual songwriting, is talking about songwriting. So,
yeah.
Because it's a fun place to be.
Yeah, well, you certainly have given us some neat stuff to think about this afternoon, and I appreciate your time. And it was good catching up with you and learning about your songwriting. So thanks, Rick.
Well, thank you very much, Greg.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.